Mm-hmm. But this is the 12 that were sent out. He just said they love the Lord.
Boy.
Did Judas really?
Well, okay. Yeah. Good point.
Was he persecuted?
For sure.
You know, there's origin.
Yeah.
He got persecuted. That man wasn't saved.
Yeah.
But he got persecuted. So can man build up enough courage, fight with vitriol, to stand in the face of the enemy and die for a cause?
For sure. Sure.
Can. So we can't always look at all of these victims of hate and rage as God's people.
True. That's what Brother Daniel was pointing out here. And again, we're basing this, most of this stuff off books written by men in history and even the enemies of the Lord's church writings. But we can see it. We do know there were those. Let's be honest, the 50 million, that's a big number. And how many of us, we go, really? Well, I don't know. I wasn't there. But I tell you what, many of our brethren, they had nothing else. This is what they had. This was their life. But,
and what's compelling about the history is not as much as the men and women and the children that are being killed, but rather, as you just said, those enemies that were recording these things, and they would say such as they would tenaciously stick to God's holy scriptures. They were independent. All these descriptions of what a New Testament church is, that's what we're gleaning from this. The enemies are describing God's people as their killing leech. And they wouldn't turn to God.
Many people have a cause a day, and some of them take martyr deaths, and many of them, but they make sure the television cameras are rolling to get people to feel sorry for them, to come back them. There was no one to come back these brethren here. You know, they were just displeasing our Lord. Brother Jared, did you have one?
Well,
and then Brother Damon.
Verses, this one, decent.
Go ahead.
2 Corinthians 4:16. For which cause we faint not, but though our outward man perish, yet the inner man is renewed day by day. For our affliction, which is but for a moment, worketh for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. While we look not at the things which are seen, but the things which are not seen. For the things which are seen are temporal, but the things which are not seen are eternal. I mean, you read back history, and those faithful, they lived this. They didn't care what happened to their outward, because their inward, they were revived. They were renewed day by day. And to them was a light affliction.
I'm telling, they were reading the scriptures, and they gained strength from the Old Testament prophets, and those faithful in the Old Testament. They gained strength from Joseph. They gained strength from Stephen. They gained strength. That's all they cared, just pleasing their God, period. Brother Dan, you had one.
We're talking about it. One of the things that really hit me last year was when you were teaching about Nero. Just thinking, at that same time, or roughly that same time, Paul writes Romans, well, God.
Yeah, yeah.
Writes Romans chapter 13. Obey them that have the rule of Lord.
Oh, my.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. All right, so we said the persecution, the gospel went forth. The Lord's plan, commission, was moving forward. You know, I was real quick, Stephen, death, we know the impact it had on Paul, right? Christ at the cross, the centurion said, truly, this was the Son of God, right? Somebody in the book of Acts, Cornelius had seen something different. He had seen something different about the not his God, but the God of heaven, right? The influence, some historians write, and this, okay, first of all, God's in charge, but some historians right, that it's because of the great number of soldiers, Roman soldiers, in the military, that found the Lord, and because they saw all this death, they were part of this death, right? But it was the large number of soldiers that converted from paganism or whatever to Christianity, to the truth, is the reason why the killing stopped, or the Roman emperors, it slowed down at least. You know, so real quick, and this is important. In 308, if you want to write this down, in 308 AD, you're looking here at this handout that I just gave you, right? In 308 AD, all right? I don't know. Sister Amanda, did you get one of these? Yes, okay. So this is going to go real fast. Here, Constantine is in Gaul, G-A-U-L, all right? There was, from 306 to 311, there was a civil war. 306 to 311, according to Mosheim, there was a civil war. Rome, there were six provinces, and Constantine was over one of them. So just think civil war, who's going to be in charge, who's going to be the big dude. There were six provinces, okay? So they're spread out a lot, right? And Constantine is one of them. All right. Quite the politician, according to Mosheim. According to Mosheim, Constantine let the others fight with each other, have their skirmishes. He tended to sort of stay to himself, strengthen his position. He watched from a distance. Seemed to be only concerned about his area, his province, but he was on guard against his fellow, quote, Romans. This was his game plan, according to Mosheim. He says on page 448, if anybody wants to read it, he strengthened his power by the attachment of his people to him. So this is what the guy was doing. So there's six, right? Well, in 310 A.D., 310, keep an eye on your numbers there. Constantine survived a murder attempt by his father-in-law, Herculius. Hmm. So daddy-in-law tried to kill him, and he survived. So Herculius is put in prison. He hangs himself in prison. So now Constantine goes from one province, right? He takes Herculius's. So now he has two. Do the math. I have two groups of soldiers. I have two places. Everybody else has now 1-1-1. Everybody got that? Then, and what's the last guy's name on here? Galerius. Yeah, look at that. So look at that last sentence. It says Galerius suffered a horrible death. He confessed that the Christian God was justly punishing him. Okay? So Maximus Galerius, he gets sick and he dies of this terrible disease. Well, Constantine, with two provinces now, takes over his. Okay? So he has two of his rivals eliminated. He has three provinces, and the other guys have 1-1-1. Is that, am I doing the right math? I think I am. All right. So do you see how he gained control? So that's just a quick summation of that. So he's in control. He's given more power. Then in 311 AD, he decides to give Christians full liberty to profess their religion. It's okay to worship God. He made it an edict. He made it a law. It's okay. And you say, okay, chew your gum, smack your gum. Okay, so the guy made a law. Remember what they have been through. Remember what has taken place since 251 AD. It has been like a time that I've never seen before, from worshiping of God's viewpoint. And now this new Roman emperor, of course, he has his motives. We'll get to that, right? He makes it a law that you pagan people, you guys, we can do whatever we want to, but these Christians can worship God how they want to. Can you imagine hearing that? They went, he said, what? No, that's what he said. This is what he said.
Nothing.
Wow.
Horse.
Say it again.
Trojan
horse. Very good. Yes. The Christian writers, I think you've heard this name, Eusebius. I think we have his name down from last night, right? And Lactantica, Tanius. They praised Constantine and Access. I think I told you that Brother Jake, your book, said Eusebius was a lapdog. Well, he wrote all these. They wrote all this stuff. They praised him. So now you're a politician, and now you might be making the Senate a little bit mad because they were all pagan, right? Because you've proclaimed this, but you have this whole group of people, and these guys are praising your name. He sort of liked that. And he looked, if I appease this group of people and I come out and I support them, I'm going to, not that he needed their votes, don't get me wrong, but I'm going to gain all them. And they're on my side. That's called a politician, right?
Yep.
They don't believe half the stuff that they proclaim. But if it gets me a whole group of folks, that's where we're going with this. All right? They praised him, his morals, his wisdom, etc. All right? No more persecution. Freedom to worship openly. He gains support. All right. Now, I can keep telling you stuff, or we can look at it somewhat here. So here we go. Page 21 in this book, I've handed them out. I have like two left or three. If you have one of these right here, this might be the last time I do it. Maybe page 15. Let's double check on that. I ordered some of these. I hope everybody has one of these. See, here I am trying to double check. Yes. So if you have one of these books right here, it's page 15. This book that I just handed out, it's page 21. Okay. Again, I am not praising and lifting up Brother Hawker, Brother Carroll here, but the guy did a lot of work. He did a lot of research. He put stuff together, okay? And it's here we go. Let's start with this. So I'm on page 21. Number 13, you can see the guy died. I just told you he died, Galerius, right? So we're at number 14 here. Are we there? Everybody there? Right. All right, here we go. Brother Doug, would you mind reading number 14? I might stop you, but here we go.
Heading of the year 8313, right?
Yes, please.
Okay.
So is everybody there? First of all, did everybody find this? Oh, it's in 23. See,
it's in 22.
That's why I had to ask you. Yeah.
Are you serious? I looked at four of them this morning. I wrote them down. Okay, I have three more. It costs three. I need one. No? All right, here.
So we need to get you a little trailer blood cannon. You can just shoot him out there.
So yeah, that's a good action. There we go.
Yeah. It's not different. It's just, I like the chart. I like the big print. I like that. Anyway. All right, Brother Doug, go ahead.
With year AD 313, Christianity has won a mighty victory over paganism. A new emperor has come to the throne of the Roman Empire. He evidently recognized something of the mysterious power of this religion that continues to grow in spite of persecution.
And just look at that sentence, please. Everybody see that sentence right there?
Mysterious power.
Okay, mysterious power. There's a couple people in the New Testament that pop into my mind. Folks, you can't see what has been going on over the years and stop thinking, and these guys are still around and they keep doing this and they don't fight. You had to recognize it. Even this guy recognizes it. Okay, go ahead.
History says that this new emperor, who was none other than Constantine, had a wonderful realistic vision. He saw in the skies a fiery red cross, and on that cross written in fiery letters, these words, "By this thou shalt conquer." He interpreted it to mean that he should become a Christian, and that by giving up paganism and by attaching the spiritual power of the Christian religion into the temporal power of the Roman Empire, the world could be easily conquered. Thus, the Christian religion would in fact become a whole world religion and the Roman Empire, a whole world empire.
All right. So as Brother Hawker, they had mind affecting drugs back then. I don't know. Brother Doug just read it. Did he care about people being able to pursue, to worship openly and whatever? No, he cared about his realm. He cared about his conquering the world. He was, but this was just an avenue that was taken. And Satan was there to use this guy big time. All right? Do some of these people that we read about, did they know what the end results are going to be down the road, or did they even care, some of them? No, they cared about the immediate now and themselves. All right? But we can see, or be looking back and piece stuff together and realize that Satan was using these individuals to accomplish Satan's goal. Right? So, number 15, please. Brother Jacob, if you would.
So under the leadership of Emperor Constantine, there came a truce, a courtship, and a proposal of marriage. The Roman Empire through its emperor seeks a marriage with Christianity. Give us your spiritual power, and we will give you our temporal power.
All right. So this guy, he recognized the strength in numbers. He recognized, okay, so I give up a little bit of paganism stuff, but I take in, you know, I buy into some of their beliefs, whatever. He makes this quote unquote unholy marriage or whatever you want to call it here. And he's offering this. He's going to do this again for himself. But then the other people that agree to it, and did you hear that? The other people, the ones that someone mentioned the church on the hill in Carthage, right? The ones that was starting to compromise a little here and a compromise a little there. Matter of fact, let's take out that word little. They were compromising enough that some brethren have said, no, we're not having fellowship. This is okay. So those people are looking at, okay, so this gives us a reprieve. We don't have to get persecuted. This is not a bad thing. And they jump on it. And they say yes. And then the next weekend they say yes. And this happens. Didn't happen. It's over a period of time. All right. Number 16 here, if you would please. Who's up here? Who can read it? Wants to read? Brother Reagan, please. Yes. Number 16. Let's go.
To eventually bring about, to make this unholy union, a council was called in AD 313. A call was made for a coming together of Christian churches or their representatives. Many, but not all, came. The alliance was consummated. A hierarchy was formed. In the organization of the hierarchy, Christ was dethroned as the head of churches, the Emperor Constantine enthroned only temporarily, however, as head of the church.
I appreciate the reading there. It says, many came, but not all. Well, who didn't go?
Or churches.
Okay.
Standing for truth.
Okay. So now look at number 16 there. What is the one thing, and there's probably more, but in this paragraph, that the true churches had to give up?
Christ is the head.
Christ is the head, right? Have you ever heard Brother Crabtree? I'm not going. What happened with the Southern Baptists in 1845, I think it was, Brother Doug? They officially cut their head off, and they put it in the hands of a board or a group of men, right? To the smack your gummers, show up for church, throw in a couple of dollars in your offering plate. Was that big of a deal? No, I tell you. And to many right here, it was a sacrifice. We can deal with this, Brother Doug.
Before any denomination with them, and before they were called Baptists, they were separatists because they refused to reform.
Sure as separatists. They refused. Everybody hear, what, did you hear that word, separatist? Now, that word separate.
A lot later in history,
go, say it again.
When the confusion of Anabaptists and other Baptists comes up and they're being accused of, but always separatists because they refuse to conform. They refuse to reform it.
I heard there was a meeting in Nice and you guys didn't go? Constantine invited? No, we didn't go. How come? Because he's not our head. We don't fall under. So Has anybody ever heard separation of church and state before? I can tell you we have separation of church and state here because the brethren wanted nothing to do with it. They didn't need it. You say, well, didn't they need Constantine to give them their freedoms? And get? No. They didn't like the previous years. They hated what was taking place. But the bottom line is they were sticking to the scriptures and the scriptures only. And if it cost them their life, God saw the big picture better than what they can see it. All right? Jax, did you have something?
Yeah, when you said they entirely cut off their head, that reminded me of a verse that's in Revelation. Thou hast lost thy first love.
But when you've lost your first love, it's no big deal to follow after the government leader, quote, in this case, and take Christ out. Okay? Well, I tell you, we'll just stop right here. So then, we're not done with this, but who got the preeminence right here? Who receives it? The emperor. Constantine, right? Initially, man does initially, and as we slide on farther, and as we go, we're going to see others that have taken over, and next thing you know, we're going to get to Pope. And next thing you know, what do we have? We're going to have big pastor, one person ruling over the others in the church, whatever. But right here is the start. Well, I say the start. I think the start, and I think the 251 is when there was a definite distinction between the group of Christians that were following the scriptures and the group of Christians that were not. And that's the word that's being used, okay? Christians, we know what the true definition is. But again, you had Judaism, you had paganism, and this group of people referred to as Christians. Did you have a hand? Go ahead.
Prayer ring last year and then beginning of this year. You have to understand that, as you said, it was little compromises that led up to this huge, indistinguishable compromise.
Very big.
That just, when those compromises are left unchecked and left unrepented of, you lead to dethroning life. Which seems unimaginable to us at this point, but when you understand that that's what little compromises left unrepented of leads to.
So the true brethren, and I'm going to come to you and we're going to turn over to Brother Mike. The true brethren that was watching all this take place. The true brethren that were watching all this take place. They had to stand up in their pulpits and they had to stand there and say, brethren, we can't do this. Yeah. We can't do this. We're either going to stick to the scriptures or we might as well just all go home or whatever the case is. We might as well just become pagans or whatever. There was a faith and a belief in those scriptures over, because in the flesh, it would be very appealing just to join the crowd here and live.
And know God.
All right. But they knew their Bible well enough, and they knew, and if it was not popular, oh my goodness, they weren't popular before, but now they're not even popular amongst their quote, oh, so-called Christianity friends. Not that they were friends, but anyway. But they knew what was right. Brother Daniel.
I was thinking, we've been going over this about 60 years from 51 to 313, you know, about 60 years. And I was just trying to put that in our timeline.
Good point.
Like, you know, we got major split in the 80s, 40 years ago. Where are they right now? Would it be really hard for us to believe and go off?
Can everybody hear that? That's just 60 years. And I believe I was talking with Brother Crabtree about this 2 weeks ago, and maybe Brother Sean. You know, and again, I'm not trying to lift up Brother Bogart. But we were looking at the Baptist Way 2 weeks ago, right? And those guys are looking back what took place 50, 60 years before the Civil War.
Yeah.
And they're looking at what happened with the Southern Baptists. And they're sitting there going, it's just like Catholicism. Because see, the churches that left the truth, the key there is they left the Baptist, they left the Church of Jesus Christ. And they're the ones that left. And back to the Southern Baptists. Did those brethren in the early 1800s, did they have the truth? Did Southern Baptists have the truth in the early 1800s? Somewhere along the way, there were some ideas, some man's thoughts, and maybe a little bit of preeminence, maybe a little bit of us. I don't know, but it was a better way. I think we heard about a guy last night that was sort of improving God's word, right? Or right? And so that same mindset led to, boom, split, boom, compromise, universal church, replace the head, whatever all that's happened. And then we see some of our forefathers in the early 1900s writing, ready for this, and defending the way missionary work was done in the book of Acts. And the way we're seeing it's like, well, that's what the scriptures say, but they're having to defend it because they were thought of being the people that were wrong. The brethren here that didn't attend these councils, the brethren here that didn't jump in on the bandwagon of freedom to worship because of the great Emperor Constantine. Yeah, they stuck to the truth. They knew it. All right, I'm already over. Sorry, Brother Cooper. Go ahead. Let's stand.